More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Tyne Daly has a long connection to Renaissance Theater Works. The actress, who was born in Madison into a theatrical family, has been to Milwaukee three times to support the work of the company.
Daly is, of course, best known for her Emmy Award-winning roles on TV in the shows Cagney and Lacey and Judging Amy. She's also known to theater audiences for her role in Gypsy. Most recently, she was nominated for a Tony for her part in the Terrence McNally play, Mothers and Sons.
Daly is back in Milwaukee on behalf of Renaissance for an evening called Tyne Daly Does Whatever She Wants at the Broadway Theater Center. But first, she joins us in the Lake Effect studio, and she explained why she supports the theater's self-described woman-centric mission.
Well, most of my career, which is now better than half a century long, I have played women. A couple of times like this. I played an eight-year-old black boy and Moby Dick rehearsed in Denver one time, which they don't hire you to do that on television. But yeah, so I tell women's stories, and I don't think that only women need to hear women's stories. I think men need to hear women's stories as much as we have listened to men's stories. And that balance has not been redressed yet. So we're still in a mode of catch-up, do you know? When Ms. Swenson approached me about coming again, and she informed me this is my third time, I can't remember anything. But she said, you know, we used to just do our stuff, but now we're just saying out loud, this is for women. This is about women. We used to support women writers and try and have wonderful plays for women actors and all that stuff. And I said, well, that's really interesting. I'm glad you're saying it out loud. And I sat down with my commonplace book, which I've been collecting for a very long time. And for the first time in my life, as an appreciator of poetry and lyric and stuff, I segregated my commonplace books. I made a pile of boy poems and girl poems, you know. And it was really, really interesting to do. It was an interesting exercise. So for me, already coming here has been informative to me. I'm not going to be speaking totally works by women, but I would say I'm doing a women-friendly material. I think it's important to be friends to each other. I think it's important that we look at each other for real, that we appreciate each other in all the phases of our lives, not just that lovely, you know, 15 to 30 space where we're fecund, but what happens before you're 15 and what happens after you're 15 and after you're 30 and after you're 60 even. So I've got a kind of a fun – I'm hoping it's a fun program that takes us basically from the 14th century to this year.
So just a narrow focus.
Yeah. I give a little. And some of this stuff is theatrical stuff. Speeches from plays is what I mean. And some of it's prose and some of it's poetry.
One of the things that I loved moving here, I'm not from here, I'm from the East Coast, but when I first got here, one of the things that attracted me was the fact that there was a company here that focused on works by women for women, that allowed women to do the things that women in theater didn't always get to do, like direct and do the technical stuff. Not the sewing of the costumes, but the hanging of the lights and the designing of the lights and that sort of thing. And there's also the part of me that says, I would like that to not be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance those desires? I'm assuming you have similar ones.
Yeah, I struggle with it because I don't like the idea that we're in some kind of a female ghetto. That this is, and what's happened with the industry or the business of show altogether is that we've fractured the audience into this is for black folks, this is for Asian people, this is for women, this is for kids under 12. In a way that I think is damaging to the experience of hearing stories. I think if we experience them as in heretofore, the olden days, I'm not supposed to talk about, but, you know, people used to take their kids to movies that were too hard for them to understand and to theater and to music that perhaps they didn't get already to stretch them and to try and, you know, make their awareness larger. And if we only appeal to ourselves – if we only read newspapers which agree with our opinions, then we're voluntarily ghettoizing ourselves. So, you know, I want it to. When they said Cagney and Lacey was a show for women, I'd say not by me, it's not. I want the equivalent of Harvey Lacey, my husband on the show, to be sitting on the couch watching this too, you know, with his sons and his daughters. I want everybody to be appreciating these stories. It's difficult to do, and it certainly hasn't happened yet. But we don't have a fair representation in our government as well. So, you know, Depending on the day, I can be really bummed by it or think I've got to get up and fight another day.
I think it's that get up and fight another day. Sometimes you just get tired.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it gets old. You think, I've won that battle already. How come I'm having to fight it again?
Yeah. I still want to see the ERA. I still think it's really important to have the language in the Constitution that's for myself and my daughters and my sisters. And so I'd like to see that happen again. We'll see how whether or not that flies. I talk about it all the time with our leaders. But meanwhile, you do what you can as an individual to tell responsible and entertaining and funny and difficult stories all rolled into one.
So when you're looking at new roles or people suggest things for you, are you looking for a good, juicy story? Is that it?
Always. You know, A is to entertain. That's other because you're leaving your house having done your day's work to have something happen to you that is so entertain is more important to me than disturb or look under rocks to find slimy creatures that crawl out from under. There's plenty of that. If I hear one more person say we're going to do the dark version of Carousel, you know, Carousel was dark enough to begin with, folks. It's like, you know, there's a kind of cultural mindset that we have to look at the dark side. I'm getting old enough to think, what about uplift? What about joy? What about encouragement? What about leaving the theater and thinking, yes, I can carry on rather than, oh, my God, I got to go home and lie down. You know, so starts with entertainment and then with smarts, how smart it is. I like smart people. I like smart entertainment. I like to go to the theater and see smartness happening. But I have a new musical for the new year, and I'm taking the fourth part in the musical because it's got such a great setup for the lead girl, and the lead girl has to be this young woman who's so talented and so unique in her physical persona. I want to be part of enhancing her career. Stuff like that you can do. Her name is Lisa Howard, and you'll hear more from her. The thing is not so much a vehicle for me as a good story in which I can play a part and advance this younger actress's endeavors. So there's different reasons for every different gig. There's a different reason for every gig.
Do you still feel like it's just one gig to the next to the next? Are you a working actor in that way?
Yeah. I have very little I don't think I have an image that I've established that needs protecting or stretching out. You know, I there's a number of spots in my career where my career change one letter into careen.
careening in your career.
Careening around, yes. You know, that I thought I could stop here and rest on these laurels and not have to continue. But it's not very interesting to me. The performing artist serves in their own time. Nobody finds your work later and says, oh, my God, isn't it too bad? You know, we missed all these wonderful sculptures or, you know, paintings that were in the closet. You're a performing artist. That means you have to be in front of people telling them, dancing for them or singing for them or whatever. So you have to serve in your own time. And as long as that time goes on, it's no use to me to be doing the same kind of work I was doing 30 years ago or 20 years ago or even 5 years ago. I got to do this year's work. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because if you don't grow, then why bother?
You die.
Yeah.
Yeah, or atrophy anyway.
Yeah, get really boring.
Yeah. I, for instance, was approached to do Gypsy for the rest of my life. And Gypsy was a lot of fun, and it's a wonderful part, and it's a story that people seem to want to hear over and over again, but I did not want to spend the rest of my life playing that again and again and again. I had to find something else to do. Even with the play I did this year, beautiful play called Mothers and Sons by Terrence McNally, which was nominated for the Tony, and I was nominated for a Tony. And the minute we didn't win our Tonys, they put up the notice, which is how the business works. But I'm less interested, even though it's a beauty of a play. But I know that it's having productions in 21 different countries as we speak and that will be done in this country, but probably not by me because I'm on to the next. I don't mean to be disloyal to the play. I'm very proud of the play. But we done it. I done it.
Yeah. Move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
How about TV?
TV, they're less interested in me than they used to be. I did my service on television, you know. I did 16 years of series work. I was nominated 16 times for the Emmy. That's pretty good. That's called batting 1,000. I was actually – I have – the 17th nomination came from a guest shot I did on my brother's show called Wings. But, you know, in the quality control department, I have done good service. Television has changed, and there's a lot of good work going on cable and alternatives to network television. I haven't found anything that anybody wanted – or haven't been approached to do anything that I found as interesting as a live theater.
There is something about that immediacy that live theater has, that audience connection, mm-hmm. that I – as good as television can be, there's something missing for me.
Well
– unless it's live
film,
television.
Yeah. Which is – I was – the only part of my dad's career that I was jealous about was live TV, because he did a lot of live TV in the late 50s and early 60s before it was way out of fashion. The live experience is certainly great for me because I get to be in the same room as the people who I'm telling the story to. But I'm hoping that it's the same for an audience. We live in a recorded world, and you can get anything you want to hear or see, not only on, you know, at home on your very obsolete television set, but you can get it, you know, on your phone. You can call up anything. It's not the same. Well, let me speak as an audience. To go and see musicians make music is almost as good as hearing them make music, maybe even better. To watch them make that music, whether it's a, you know, symphony orchestra or single singer or whatever, it's just different. I think of it as a live time versus frozen time. Movies, television, anything on film is frozen time. That day has been fixed in its space-time continuum. And it's great to have it, but it ain't the same as going there for me.
No, nor for me. And I love both. And
it's me too. Yeah, there's a lot of room for a lot of things.
Right.
You know.
Right. But there is something about that connection with another human being, either making music or telling you a story, whatever it mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. that is irreplaceable as far as I'm concerned.
I'm hoping so. I think that the more mechanized we get, indeed, the more precious the live experience becomes. Yeah. So showing up, you know, is 47% of anything. Showing up in the streets, showing up in bed, showing up is really important. So showing up here is fun. I have a connection here that goes way back to friends of my parents. Jill Heavenrich and her late husband Herb were wonderful friends of my parents when they were kids aspiring to be in the theater, to make theater a long time ago. And the Renaissance Theater is a theater that Jill Heavenrich has supported for a long time. And she's the one who roped me in the first place.
Oh, okay. So the truth comes out.
No. Yeah. I come for very personal reasons. You know, one of my least favorite phrases in life is when folks say to you, well, that's nothing personal. To me, the whole thing is personal. Always. it's happening to me, it's personal. So nothing personal is one of those really yucky excuses.
If you're going to insult me, at least tell me that you're going to.
Tell me
to.
It was about you.
Yeah.
It's you I'm mad at. Nothing personal. My foot.
I'm assuming the answer to this question is yes, but I want to ask it anyway. Do you consider yourself a feminist?
Yes.
And how do you define that for yourself? So do I, but I would love to hear, because we're so afraid of that word these days.
We have become very afraid of that word, and that's a shame. I'm a feminist because I'm a female, because I'm a girl, because it's my tribe. I'm interested in what happens to me as much, you know, they say all politics is self-interest, you know, all people vote self-interest. The extent of my self-interest is, yes, I am interested in what happens to myself, to my daughters, and to the wives of my male friends, because that's my – this time around, that's what I got. It doesn't mean that I'm uninterested in what happens to men. But I think in a patriarchal society, which we have and have – it's mostly all over the world, in a man's world, the parts of life that need attention are the ones that aren't obviously in the forefront. But so far, we can't do it without each other.
No.
It's not just that we can't do it without men. They can't do it without us either. We can't do it without each other. The setup is that that both sides of the sexual dynamic make a whole. My last daughter went off to school, and And she called me up and she said, but I don't understand. You know, when the boys play, we go off and cheer for them. And then when we're playing, they don't. Why don't they come and cheer for us? And I said, well, they probably are really nervous about those little costumes, the little short skirts and the sweaters and stuff. But maybe, you know. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. They should be on the sidelines. They're all – it's a school team, right? They should be on the sidelines leading the cheer for the team. And she'd noticed something really basic, I thought. In a better world, we'd all cheer for each other.
Absolutely. Tyne Daly, it has been such a pleasure. Will you come back when you're next in town on your fourth visit?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I will. I'd be delighted.
That would be fantastic.
Thank you.
Actress Tyne Daly. She's best known for her TV roles on Cagney and Lacey and Judging Amy, but has been on countless TV shows, movies, and stage plays in her more than six decades in show business.
She's in Milwaukee to headline a fundraiser tonight called Tyne Daly Does Whatever She Wants for Renaissance Theater Works. There is more information at wuwm.com/lake effect. We'll take one last break, and then we'll meet legendary American metalsmith Robert Ebendorf ahead of his event in Racine on Friday. That's when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.